Welcome back to the Teaching in Tech podcast for season two with Alan and Chad, where we continue to explore everything related to teaching, learning, and technology integration. Working with teachers, we see amazing things happening in classrooms every day.
In each episode, we'll detail teaching strategies and technology integration ideas that are working. Also, special guests will join us to share strategies that have been successful with students.
Well, welcome back for another episode of Teaching in Tech with Alan and Chad. And it's been a little bit of a hiatus, but we are back and in the studio.
Good to be back.
I have to say, with spring testing and some of the things that we had going on, things definitely got a little bit hectic. But it's good to get in and talk a little bit about relevant issues in education and some of the things that are going on. You know, a lot has been said in the news recently here in Ohio about a problem that's not necessarily specific to just our state, but really all around the country, and that's cell phones in schools.
Yeah, and I mean, Ohio is already in a unique situation with us transforming our Department of Education, but, you know, they're really looking at refining some of the legislation we have in regards to our public school systems.
If you watch the news, you've heard a lot, you know, talked about this legislation that's being put into effect, and a lot of people refer to it as a cell phone ban in schools. But as we got into the actual bill, here's what we found out. What it actually says is not later than the first day of July that immediately follows the effective date of this amendment, each school district board of education shall adopt a policy governing the use of cellular telephones by students during school hours.
Yeah, it's interesting because right there is pretty vague, right? I mean, and it goes down to talk about what the policy shall do, limit the possible use during school hours, reduce cellular telephone related distractions in classroom settings. But one in particular that I thought was interesting, you know, like you said, Chad, everybody's talking about this being a cell phone ban, right? And we know a lot of our staff has said, what are we doing to address us getting rid of cell phones in schools? But right here, Section D says Division C of this section shall not be construed to require a district board to adopt a policy that prohibits all cellular telephone use by students. Nonetheless, any district that adopts a policy that prohibits all cellular telephone use by students shall be considered to have met the requirements. So, I mean, to me, right there, it says we're not requiring it, but we support it.
Yeah, it's so when you hear that in the news about a cell phone ban, really what it's asking or what it's requiring is that every district has to have a plan in place. I would think you'd be pretty hard-pressed to find a district that doesn't have a plan in place at this point.
I mean, it's 2024, right? Cell phones have been in classrooms for 20 years at this point, predominantly over the last decade, where they've really, you know, the incline of social media, texting, FaceTiming, all of those, right? Cell phones were already a piece of it just because you could make the phone call, but now it's like...
It's really a computer in your pocket.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think that what's interesting here is that now, instead of looking at this from a standpoint of a cell phone ban, really what's required is each district to have a plan. And I think probably what you're going to find is that, and most districts would agree, while they have plans in place, there's still a lot of room for improvement to start limiting some of these distractions in the classroom.
Absolutely. And I see a lot of districts at this point probably using this as a leverage piece as well by saying, you know what, the state is actually wanting us to address this more. While the state legislation is very vague in its regard, school districts may be able to take advantage of this and leverage with their communities.
Yeah, and I think you're right. When you look at it from a standpoint with your students, with your parents, with the community, in saying that, hey, this is a state initiative and we're trying to take what we've already started and then continue to improve that, really to get to the point of what's the end result. We want to see less distraction, less issues that come about in school. And so, you know, all districts, I think, are going to be trying to refine and revamp a little bit of what they do and make this, you know, a little bit more effective, because we've all, I would say, not just in the district that we work in, but all school districts, it's been an issue for everybody.
Oh, absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, you know, at least the parents I've talked to, they acknowledge that they want their kids to come to school to learn, right? They want that to be the primary focus. I think as we start diving down and we talk a little bit more in depth about this, we may point out a few things in regards to maybe issues that might come up when we talk with parents or the community. But overall, I think we all want a common goal.
Yeah, that's for sure. So in your role in this past year as an assistant principal, you know, you were overseeing the red team here at McKinley High School. You know, what are some of the issues that you see when it comes to students and their cell phones, students and their, you know, their personal devices? What are some of the issues you see coming about in the classrooms that are preventing that learning from taking place?
You know, I think we can narrow it down to a big three when we look at education. Lost instructional time, increased social conflict, and then outside communication that impedes learning. One of the big things that we've talked about that students kind of lose track of are watching videos, right? You've got YouTube and TikTok, right? Where kids sit there and they just scroll and they watch and they're distracted. The increased social conflict. You know, we're in a world right now where students and kids went essentially 2 years without a whole lot of actual social interaction.
Face to face.
And now they're put back in front of a screen. And, you know, you got that screen courage and they say things that they wouldn't normally say in a face to face. And they don't know how to have conflict management or emotional management.
Not just a problem for students either. I mean, that's an adult problem as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you got text messaging and I can say things there and I can avoid the person after I say it. You know, predominantly our kids aren't texting. They're not using Facebook Messenger. They're really using Snapchat and Instagram.
Well, of course they're not using Facebook Messenger. They're not grandparents yet.
That's true. They go, most of them don't even have Facebook accounts at this point.
No.
But then we get a lot of outside communication. Outside communication with parents, other siblings, friends in other districts. I even think outside communication, one that didn't come to mind, but like DoorDash.
Yeah.
Right. You outside communication with outside members.
Yeah, we actually had to put a rule in place that we would not accept any DoorDash orders for students because so many were trying to have them sent to the building.
Absolutely, and not realizing that's a safety concern.
Right.
But you know, when we have these big three created a lot of conflict that wasn't just an individual impeding their own learning; it was impeding mass amounts of learning.
Oh, no doubt. And as you mentioned with a few of those items, you know, think about the idea of YouTube. If they're watching YouTube on their school issued device, there's some parameters in place. There's some guardrails there.
Right.
Which a lot of our kids aren't going to want to operate within those guardrails. So then when they go to their cell phone and they're using their cellular connection, they have basically free rein to anything they want to look at on the internet.
True, because any video they can access doesn't need to be approved by our district.
Right, and then when you get into that social media issue, you know, obviously so with school networking, typically those social media providers, those are going to be sites that are blocked by your filter. So again, then the cell phone comes into play because then they can have a way to access and get around that, which they can't do on their school-issued iPad. And, you know, you start thinking about one of the things I know that you mentioned as a principal that you run into. They also like Snapchat because the way that Snapchat works, where, you know, after messages are sent, then those are only available for a limited period of time and then they disappear. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're going to say something that you really don't want to have a you know, digital trail leading back to, then Snapchat's kind of a, you know, a preferred method of communication because I can say things that aren't going to be visible later on unless someone takes the time to screenshot what I said.
And then when they do screenshot, they see that the other person screenshotted it. Right. So,
I didn't realize that. So Snapchat actually will notify you if someone screenshotted your message.
Yeah. From what I've gathered, I'm not necessarily a user of all of these, but kids have shown me that is the case because they'll say, oh, I know that they saw it. I know that they did this. I know that they did that. And then it almost creates like a gotcha because they try and get each other back as a defense mechanism.
Right. It's almost like it makes me think of, you know, where maybe several years ago when it was a thing like being recorded on a phone call without your knowledge or without, to be blackmailed. Well, now this is just like a little bit more advanced form of that where now you're sending things that you think are just something that you said that's going to disappear, but I'm kind of recording that without your permission by screenshotting
absolutely.
It.
Yep, right. But that's where like if you're putting it in writing, you better mean it, right? And understand that anybody can take and see that.
You know, that outside communication, the other thought I had with that too is that a lot of that is probably fairly innocent. If, you know, mom's texting her student about, you know, pick up after practice, or, you know, you might have forgot something that you need for an after school activity. And so on one hand, it's really not necessarily a nefarious thing to start with, but depending on when the student has their phone out and then what that leads to, maybe they get a text message from a parent after they check the message and they have three other notifications, then the distraction is there. And then they're right down the rabbit hole as opposed to being focused in class, as well as getting it out, which can cause a distraction with the teacher or possibly even a confrontation.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes with that, you know, it's a simple notification to say FYI, but they turn it into a more, you know, expansive,
not necessarily handled in a mature way.
Absolutely.
You know, as far as the challenge that teachers are facing in the classroom, I mean, there's a lot of studies that show cell phones and apps are really designed to be addictive. So the actual design, when it comes from whether it's app developers, whether it's somebody who's, you know, whether it's on the side of iPhone or an Android device, you know, part of the allure of that for them is to keep you on it as long as possible with advertising and all the other things that go along with it. You know, what some of these studies show is that, you know, for example, when I get a notification on my phone, you know, your brain releases dopamine. That's a chemical that basically it gives you a feeling, a short burst of euphoria. So, you know, you think about that especially for a child with a developing brain, if they're getting a chemical hit that's basically given them that burst of happiness, they're going to want to get that over and over again.
Oh, absolutely.
As would any person, even with an adult. So the downside to that is, though, you know, you think about it's a fairly recent term, but you think about that term of doom scrolling, where yes, you're just on your phone, whether it's a social app, whether it's YouTube, whether it's even on just a browser, looking for something interesting to you. You know, that lack of dopamine then can have the opposite effect, where you can end up, you know, with a letdown because you're not finding what you're looking for and not getting that burst of that chemical to the brain.
So it's like an ongoing search for that high again.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, another chemical that comes into play with oxytocin, this is actually known as a love hormone, and it plays a role in like that addiction high, and it creates a sense of attachment. So I know the one story I've referred back to at times several years ago, when I had my phone, the battery was going bad and I had to get the battery replaced. It was like a really difficult thing to hand over my phone and walk out of the Apple store, even knowing it was only going to be gone for a couple hours, because I just felt like I was by myself. You know, I was going to spend I was like, what? It just was a really, and I could actually recognize and notice, like, it was this really weird, like, the attachment to it. Even if I wasn't planning being on it, I wasn't going to have it in my pocket. And so that sense of attachment, you know, we a lot of times, like, you know, might joke about kids where, like, their phone's another appendage with, like, their legs, their arms, and then their phone. But there really is that sense of attachment. You know, and as we mentioned, the apps are often encouraged to design the users to, like, stay engaged. You know, whether it's advertisements that they are revenue producers for the app designer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the, I guess, the motivation on one side. But then, especially with students, they might not necessarily in the development stage that they're in have the ability to see what's going on and kind of advocate for themselves that, hey, this might not be so good for me.
Well, and I don't think, you know, with this, I'm trying to think of the right way to word it, but with this generation, really, you know, they were born with cell phones in their hand. Mm-hmm. So they don't know what it's like to be without it. Mm-hmm. So essentially,
yeah, the digital natives.
Absolutely. Where there's a lot of positive there. I'm not discounting that fact, especially in a technological world. But when we're trying to say they can't recognize, they really can't. Right. They have no basis or foundation to look back and say this is what it was like without technology, because they've forever had it.
Mm-hmm.
And without appropriate barriers that they essentially have to set for themselves, they're never going to find that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is where the state legislation somewhat is trying to come into play, saying, okay, we're as a whole recognizing across the board that this is a concern. We're impeding our ability to learn things that we've established as a state that is standards. Like we are saying, this is the expectation of what you know by the time you leave high school. So we have to at least step in and say, districts, you got to do something, mm-hmm. right? You got to pause on the technological use it is impeding what we want them to know. And then, you know, from there, hopefully you can coach them in appropriate ways to use technology.
Yeah, that's the key, I guess, regardless of, you think about every student that we have, like the parents at home are going to have a variety of opinions on how much is too much, what's appropriate use of this. So none of that really is an issue for the school, because there's going to be a lot of different opinions. The issue for the school is, you know, this is clearly becoming a roadblock to learning. So what kind of things do we need to put in place so that everybody gets the outcomes that they want? Obviously, from the school's perspective, we want to see students learning and being successful. Parents generally want the same thing. Students don't necessarily realize it yet, but that's really what's best for them. So we got to get to the point where we can find some things that help to kind of control this and put this into a, you know, really a framework so that students are getting that education that they're really here for in the first place.
Absolutely. And I just want to quote something from the Addiction Center, just to put it in perspective of what we're talking about. It states, social media platforms such as Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram produce the same neural circuitry that is caused by gambling and recreational drugs to keep consumers using their products as much as possible. It also said studies have shown that the constant stream of retweets, likes, and shares from these sites cause the brain's reward area to trigger the same kind of chemical reaction seen with drugs like cocaine.
Yikes.
You know, so when we talk about this being an addiction, right, just telling them put your phone away, it's like telling, you know, heroin user, put down the needle.
Right.
You know, and
it's not that simple.
That's a pretty drastic comparison, but it's real.
Right.
You know, and understanding that these kids grew up with this in their hand, and you're ripping away a life source.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're exactly right. When you're looking at an addiction that's comparable to gambling or to drug use, just saying don't do it and just asking a kid to, hey, understand this isn't good for you. When you're dealing with an addiction, that's usually not going to be quite enough to be able to get over the hump and to be able to move forward.
Absolutely.
So, you know, one of the things I think that's important for us to consider, if we're looking at our school district, we obviously already have a cell phone policy in place or an electronic devices policy in place. And this dates back to, this was adopted in 2020. So it's within the last 5 years. It's not like it's necessarily been implemented within the last year or two, but it's not something that's way out of date and, you know, a decade old or so. And basically what ours says, just to summarize, it says that in some instances, the possession and use of electronic equipment can be appropriate. Often the possession of this equipment and devices by students can have a distracting, disrupting effect, along with the ability to intimidate others in the school environment. Also mentions academic dishonesty. So really what our board policy says is that we're going to supply the electronic equipment to kids, and their devices should really not be out unless they have the permission of the principal or the classroom teacher.
Yeah, which does layer that we are prohibiting that tech, but we are also, it's essentially doing what the state's doing to us, right? It's the board is saying that there's this problem. We are telling parents, right? We are supporting the complete prohibition of personal use of technology. And there are still some on here that talk about prohibited devices, like you cannot bring them into school, you know, such as a portable TV, a boombox.
That was my favorite, that you can't bring in your own boombox.
You said cardboard is allowed.
Cardboard for the dance moves, what would be allowed. I mean, actually, it really fits in well with like those corners where the kids like to create the TikToks.
That's true. They could TikTok corner over there.
A little bit of a throwback.
Yeah, laser pens, right? There are some that on here are saying they're prohibited across the board, but there are others that, like cameras, smartphones, headphones, that say in particular areas can be used, right? In addition to the school-issued device. So it's not saying a complete prohibition of this, but it's leaving that subjectivity up to the building itself, which is appreciated when you look at ways that you can leverage different types of technology. It also allows for the use
opens up for the teacher options that they can use.
Absolutely. I mean, I would just incentivize it, right? I had it as an incentive when I taught. It was, you know, if we get this and this done and you are at this percent, right, you're allowed this much allotted time with your personal device. But you taught appropriate behaviors on how to use it.
It's interesting on our board policy, there's 13 items that are considered to be prohibited all the time. You know, consider including like the laptops and the tablets, which we don't provide internet connections for anyway.
Right.
As you mentioned, the boom boxes, portable CD players, portable TVs, all those things that, you know, we don't, a lot of those things have become, you know, they've become obsolete. But pagers, when you think about from papers, like a standpoint of a school district, you have to include all those things. Otherwise, there'll be an exception and then it's not part of policy. But those three things that are basically allowed with the teacher's permission and supervision, you know, the smartphones, headphones, and in some cases, cameras, which is interesting because the photo and video camera really is included in the smartphone. So in most cases, you know, those two are one and the same.
And it does say, just to point out, it does say instructional purpose, right? So it that is a big piece there as well.
Yeah, for being used for instruction. Now, one thing that I would say I feel is okay, but not everyone would agree with, if a teacher is using that technology as a motivation, like you mentioned, if your grades are at a certain level, if you've got all of your assigned things done for the day, and let's say maybe there's 5 minutes left in the period, I don't have a problem with you checking your messages or having your phone out. To me, if that motivator works for some kids and gets more out of them academically, I'm okay with that. There's some people who might not agree with that.
Yeah. And I think that that's where, honestly, I think when you talk to teachers and they hear cell phone ban from the state, I think they're worried about having kind of that freedom stripped, right? There's some that I think it helps in their management piece where they're like, it's just across the board. This is what we got to do. But then you have some, like if I thought it was a full ban, I'd have been concerned because I'm like, well, I do use it to leverage.
I know a lot of our teachers, actually, the kids have Google Classroom on their phones, and when they forget and aren't prepared and bring their iPads, they result, you know, to using those.
That as now,
As the technology resource teacher in the building, I'll be the first person to tell you that a cell phone is not a good learning device.
Too small.
Yep. You know, it's cumbersome. If I'm trying to type a written response on a cell phone, it's not going to work.
And it's too distracting when notifications are popping up anyway.
You've got notifications. From a security standpoint at the building level, that's not under our filter. So, you know, you've got some other issues there.
Right.
But I mean, there still are teachers in an emergency that like to be able to have that. You know, I think back to, gosh, this has probably been 15 years ago, but when the website Poll Everywhere first came out, I put that to use right away because the kids, most of them at that point, even 15 years ago, didn't have smartphones, but most of them had a cell phone with at least some texting capabilities. And so we went through and I used that just to say, hey, let's implement this in a way that's going to engage you in the content. And for the most part, it went pretty well. The one thing that was kind of funny is that, not so much funny for the student, but I thought was kind of ironic, is after they got connected to that site, because you basically just text like a 5-digit code, you know, text a message to this code and get connected. They got hit with like, I think they got like 100 messages over the weekend. Like
all spam.
Yeah, based on that. So I kind of like dialed back the use of it after that, kind of an unintended consequence. But, you know, that's just an example of, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it more from like an authoritarian standpoint of, this is not allowed, keep it put away, I don't want to see it ever, which in 2024 just isn't a very real, in my opinion, a very realistic way of approaching it.
And we have some that do it, and they do it well. But
that's
they
true.
Are, but it
that's
is
true.
A very consistent implementation.
It has
of
to
that.
Be, yeah, it has to
has
be consistent.
To be, yeah.
There can't even be one exception. It has to be consistent daily.
But even with that being said, it's that class, and they go in the hall, and they go to the next class, and it's still available.
Well, you know, and I think in a school the size of ours, in a building this big, I have a hard time with, if my colleague next door is a zero tolerance, the thing never comes out and I don't ever see it, or it's going to be a major problem, I don't have a problem with that. But I don't necessarily, if I have a different opinion as a teacher, I don't want to live under those rules if my class functions a little bit differently. So when you're talking about like a blanket policy that covers every single, we have over 100 staff members, it's pretty challenging.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's think about this a little bit and talk about some of the things that schools are implementing. I mean, we're in the same situation as most districts. We have a policy in place. Some of our teachers are already having success controlling it. In some cases, we have some areas where we need to improve.
Yep.
What are some possible solutions that schools can look at?
Well, a district close to us, Akron Public, just implemented Yonder Bags this year. Now, those that don't know what a Yonder Bag is, this product actually started with concerts, right? Concert venues or more entertainment style where they didn't want a cell phone to be out for recording or disruption purposes. Mm-hmm. And all it is like a little, I believe, canvas bag. You slide your phone in, tap it on a magnet, and it locks. And you keep it that way. You can keep it on your person, because I think the trust piece is where a lot of the conflict comes in when a teacher says, "Hey, I'll hold on to it."
Right. So, and you're also in some ways responsible for that phone. If right. So, student has a brand new, you know, iPhone Pro Max that's $1,400 device.
Right. You don't want to have to. It just takes away that liability right. piece. So it pretty much locks it in the bag that you keep on you all day. And then when you leave, you tap the magnet, it unlocks it, and then you're good to go. Mm-hmm. And so there are specific station areas that you lock and unlock from at designated times during the day.
Now, I have to say, I haven't looked into any of these in terms of pricing, but typically when products are designed and sold to schools, they're not cheap. Any idea what these run a piece for a Yonder bag?
I am not exactly sure, but I do know that... you know, they do recommend buying, I believe, at least two per student, just for the sake of, right, one gets lost. Because there's some that, you know, venues, they'll collect the bag and then you grab a new bag.
Grab a new one each day.
But cleanliness reason, yeah. You know, so, like I think
well,
some schools
I think
will
about
say
that.
Keep the bag.
Think about this. If I'm a student, I'm just thinking about this from a standpoint. My phone can potentially be up to my face.
Mm-hmm.
So then I put it in a bag, and the next day some other student uses that.
Yep.
I don't know if I like that down the road if it's getting used by someone different every day.
Which is the thought of the student keeps the bag. Well, we know things happen, especially if it's a canvas material. Things tear, things can be cut, things can be
intentionally.
Lost. Yeah, intentionally, unintentionally.
Now, I don't say this at all being like, you know, in a joking way, but if you think about like the desperation of an addict.
Yeah.
And some of the things that happen with, you know, whether it's substance abuse or gambling or other things, the decisions people would make, to think that a student needs to get to their phone so bad that it's been locked by the school and they're going to cut it open. That's not hard to picture that happening.
No. And I think that even with that, there's an emergent, like it's made in that material for an emergency to be cut.
Yeah, that's true as well. If for some reason the magnetic lock malfunctions, you got to be able to get the device out.
And so in that regard, you know, I think that this could be a good management tool where you're helping to design that way of creating those boundaries across the board. But I think that it could also be easily circumvented as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, right? Because other districts have implemented it. I think that there are challenges in implementation, but I think there are benefits in the long run as well.
You know, I think when you look at K-12 education, there's really not a one-size-fits-all approach either. We're kind of looking at this from a high school perspective.
True.
If you're looking at, you know, primary and intermediate buildings, middle schools, if I looked at an intermediate, building, like let's say a 4-5-6 building or a 3-4-5 building, I think it's pretty realistic to think that Yonder bags would work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Middle school, depending on the level of enforcement, I think it's a little bit more reasonable as well.
Yep.
Part of it, though, once you start to get to high school, we're hoping that we're starting to get a little bit more maturity and maybe preparing them closer toward adulthood. You know, think about, I haven't been in a meeting recently where someone at some point hasn't had their phone out. But I also haven't been in a meeting recently where somebody's just blatantly watching a YouTube video with the volume up and distracting others.
Yeah.
So, you know, I look at it, if we can start to get kids thinking more like an adult, that this is something that we all have, just what's the level of appropriateness?
Yeah. Cause even like you just said, you're in a meeting and adults are on their phone, but it's how you do it.
Here's a question I have for you. So from an assistant principal perspective, let's say that, you know, the building says we should not see these devices being out. Just put them in your locker, otherwise they'll be confiscated. Like, from an assistant principal's perspective, what problems do you see with that type of solution?
Or
maybe what type of positives?
Yeah, I think initially any type of thing like that, I always call it like ripping the Band-Aid approach, right? When you rip a Band-Aid, you always have that first sting, and then long term, you don't even notice it anymore. And I think if something were like, if that were to happen where you have a major implementation or change, you're ripping the Band-Aid. And there's going to be this major influx of pain, which is addressing all of the cell phones at once. But if you're consistent and you address all those cell phones at that time, down the road, you're no longer going to feel the pain of the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if any solution is implemented, or potential solution, I should say, is implemented, it just has to be done consistently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's all we can really ask for any plan, and to continue to address things in a consistent manner.
If I'm a superintendent and I'm looking at my students already have lockers, why would I purchase these bags?
Yeah.
You know, really, that's almost like just keeping the addictive thing that much closer to them. The other thing I look at, though, if I'm looking at the downside to like a locker, you know, it's in your locker all day. One, a lot of our students don't use their lockers. So, you know, you're trying to then kind of rebuild just like day-to-day culture, because if the student doesn't use the locker regularly, asking them to put their phone in it. I honestly don't think I'm exaggerating when I say some students probably aren't even sure where their locker is.
Or they get a locker that's away from the rest of their classes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Also, the fact that often our kids have been known to share combinations with others and share lockers, that becomes very problematic too. So while a locker seems like a really simple solution, I think just the reality of the day-to-day, at least in a high school, I maybe see some downsides to that.
But I do know there are some schools that do create that as part of their plan,
mm-hmm.
right? Where they say every student has their own locker. But like, I think you're right, maybe in a smaller, more manageable setting,
mm-hmm.
One that's probably not as just busy.
I wonder if just the overall, the physical size of our building, along with the crowdedness of the hallways, if that has anything to do with it deters kids from wanting to be at their lockers.
Yeah. I think that
where you're, as you're mentioning, if you're, let's say that you're in a school that's the quarter of the size of our building, it might become a little bit more manageable.
And I think it's a trust thing too,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't want to leave your stuff in a place that's not on you.
That's, and when we talk about that addictive nature of it, it is like really like leaving something that's really important to you behind. You know, the idea of just requiring to have the phone powered off, you know, that's a potential solution for teachers that, hey, if the student comes in, they keep the phone on their person. They don't have to worry about it being like, you know, in someone else's care during the day. You just have it physically turned off where it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be on. I can see that being a potential solution. The problem I see is that it's too close to them.
You know,
the constant temptation's there to get it. And if I'm going to have it on me, am I really going to have it turned off?
And I look at how we address cell phones during testing time,
mm-hmm.
and 90, let's just arbitrary number, 99% of the time, I mean, really, there's minimal argument about cell phone.
There really isn't too much. We had, I think, you know, I can go back to our testing period this year. The number of tests we gave was in the thousands.
Yeah.
We had, in terms of invalidations that I sent over for tests that had to be invalidated because the student had a cell phone out, 5, 6. Now, that's not, you know, that's not to say, can I certify that every proctor was as diligent? I don't know. But
for the most part, we are pretty consistent during testing.
Yeah.
And I look at that being, they can do it, right? But we promise two things. One, the test is important.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you'll get your phone after all testing is done.
Right.
And I think that if, you know, right there, it's off and in a bag.
Mm-hmm.
Like those are types of things that management piece, if they know that they get it when we're done.
Yep.
And something that they're doing is important enough to put their phone away,
they can power through. For any of the sessions that I ran in the gym with, you know, running anywhere from 70 to about 120 students, you know, we used those old brown paper lunch bags.
Yeah.
And it was, the teachers prepped the kids in advance, the teachers that were testing, the kids came down, they put their phones in there. And honestly, to me, the biggest distraction was when they were finished, them getting their phone out of the bag as opposed to the cell phone. So, you know, the crinkling of the paper stuff when some other kids were finishing testing. But, you know, another thing that you've heard of some teachers doing is those old calculator caddies that would hang on the wall. You know, having students drop their cell phones in there when they come into class at the beginning of the period. The one thing I don't like about that is, I mean, I do like the idea of just kind of if it's a class routine, but it just really, I think, depends on how good of a negotiator are you, how good of a used car salesman are you, because if I make that my policy, okay, I've got that blue caddy hanging on the wall and I've got a number for each kid and you drop your phone in at the beginning, all right, so first five kids put them in. Student six says, I ain't put my phone in there.
Right.
Then so now there's a line drawn in the sand. Okay, so am I going to allow them then to get around that? The whole system breaks down right from there.
Yep.
Am I going to then, and then, you know, you think about then, okay, so the student refuses. What's the next step? Then I remove them from class. They're missing out on learning. So that's one of the concerns I have with that, along with, can I really say that I can certify throughout the whole period I'm monitoring that thing and making sure no one's pulling anything out of there?
Yeah, I think that adds back to the liability piece. While, you know, even our board policy doesn't say that anything's liable because mm-hmm. they're bringing a prohibited device into school, at the end of the day, right, it just creates more of a worry that you don't want to have. You don't want to have to be thinking that you're losing somebody else's device.
Yeah, we certainly don't want to create any
because you're forcing extra, them to put it in there.
Any extra liabilities.
Yeah, you're forcing them to put
right,
it in there.
Right, it's compulsory. You're going to put it in there.
Yes. Yeah, so,
and then if something happens, if I force you to do that.
You know, and I know, and so I have some teachers in our building that do it as an option, mm-hmm. right? So the cell phone policy is you can't have it out unless it's during unrestricted time. And then at that point,
which in my class was typically 0 minutes.
Yeah, right. I mean, really, unless, like I said, it was incentivized.
5 minutes at yeah. the end or an incentive, yeah.
But if it's addressed, so a teacher will say, hey, I need you to put your cell phone away. And they'll say, you can put it in, you know, the caddy up front as an option. Mm-hmm. Like if you can't keep it in your pocket and you would like to put it up there, please feel free. But know that at that point, that is your warning, right? And so a lot of them say you have the initial warning and then there's a consequence. Mm-hmm. And so I know some students that have taken advantage of that. I used to have some, if you can't, I'll put it in my desk. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I got others, you're not touching my phone. Right. But it gives them the option.
A little more autonomy.
It puts the power in their hands.
Right. For them to choose. Okay. The thing that's non-negotiable, you're not going to be using the cell phone in class. You have a choice over which method you're going to use to keep yourself from doing it.
Exactly.
So the one thing that you mentioned earlier, you talked a little bit about that idea of ripping off the Band-Aid. You know, there's going to be some potential roadblocks as schools take what their policies are, what they already have.
Yeah.
And as we start trying to work toward and improve this, we know that the state's recognizing that this is a problem. That's why the legislation was introduced. You know, one of the things that I see, this idea of addressing an addiction. So if these cell phone addictions are truly on par with gambling or you know, substance addictions, you know, think about that. And again, I don't say this with any type of joking, but let's say there's somebody who's a smoker and they're addicted
yes.
and they're trying to quit. Okay, so during that period for the very beginning of them trying to quit, they're going to be very aggravated and irritated all the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I see this as being very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar situation when you have kids that are truly addicted and have like the same types of chemical responses. When we try to completely shut this down during learning times, there's going to be some real irritation and aggravation that's going to go on.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, another piece with that is, you know, just because those, let's keep it simple, right? The smoker, even when they stop smoking, there are still triggers that make them want to smoke.
Right.
Right. So it comes back to also, once the band has been ripped, staying consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can always fall off at any given point, right? So if we're adding that parameter or implementing whatever to restrict the phone, the Band-Aid's ripped, you have to stay consistent with keeping it off, or else, you know, we'll fall right back into old routine.
You know, what's kind of interesting, as you mentioned, there are some teachers who really aren't having a lot of problems with this.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's impossible and it can't be done. Some of it comes down to either the system that the teacher has in place, or I think back to maybe where I would have had trouble at times, being willing to take the time to really fight the battle hard up front and then just be consistent once you get it under control. Sometimes, I mean, let's be honest, the path of least resistance is if there's only a couple kids and it's not a huge distraction, just to let it go if they've got them under the desk or under the table. And, you know, really as a teacher, you know, it can be done. We've seen some teachers do it.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of being consistent.
And then we have some that don't want to fight the battle.
Right.
right? So, and right. I think that
depending on your person, and I honestly, that was partly my personality as a teacher. I wasn't necessarily the type that was always trying to be everybody's friend, but at the same time, I just wanted to teach my content and have good interactions with kids. I didn't want to fight all day.
Yeah.
So that can definitely be a roadblock. You know, another thing too, I think when we talk about parent support, you know, you mentioned early in the episode, really at the end of the day, schools and parents do have the same goal. They want their kids to get a good education.
Absolutely.
But I think the one thing that's difficult is many of these parents, without realizing it, are probably addicted themselves to their cell phone.
Yeah.
And so wanting that constant line of communication to their student, and obviously there's going to be a little bit of a, probably a little bit of a disagreement about what constitutes an emergency.
Yeah, right.
You know, parents are going to say, I paid for this cell phone. In some cases, they'll say, I paid for this cell phone. I need to be able to get a hold of my child when I want to get a hold of them.
Understandable, right? But at the end of the day, when it starts to create a disruption or distraction for others, when we answer a phone call in the middle of class, mm-hmm. you have now taken the attention away from the instruction and put it on that person that is answering the cell phone,
mm-hmm.
which isn't as simple as it being a one-on-one conversation through a text.
Right.
It is now a major disruption of the learning environment.
Mm-hmm.
So in that turn, you're now impeding those other students from learning in that classroom.
Right. Right. That's actually something that, you know, in my time as a middle school teacher, a lot of texting, you know, messing around, trying to watch videos, that type of stuff, hands under the desk, under the table. I've come across a couple of those in the last couple of years being out and about in classrooms where a kid actually taking a phone call from a parent, friend, family
member. Or a FaceTime. Which is worse.
Right during the middle of class. Yeah. And those are certainly very distracting, definitely cause a big, big disruption. You know, the other thing too that I think is difficult, especially depending on the size of your staff, the size of your building, trying to get an agreement among staff to be able to be consistent. So you can put in a number of policies. You can write, you know, rules, policies, procedures. Most districts have them.
Yep.
But getting your staff to consistently enforce those, because we all have a little bit different opinion about what's acceptable, what's not, what's too much, in what cases, you know, depending on a personal relationship with a kid, whether you're going to give them another chance, you know, all of those things, getting that consistency amongst the staff. As we mentioned, there's some staff members who are already handling it pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. But then there's some that, you know, like we've talked about, they don't see cell phones necessarily as an issue.
Mm-hmm. Or there's some that may not want to fight it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're talking about a major initiative and trying to implement a plan, that full staff investment is really going to be an important thing.
Yes. And selling them on why it's important, you know, and what are we going to achieve if we do this?
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, just as I said, you know, parents and us want the student to be successful. We want teachers to feel supported and to know that they're being given the best opportunity to teach the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Our teachers are in positions because they love the content that they teach. And so we want to sell them on the fact that by limiting and addressing this, that we are giving them the best opportunity to just strictly focus on teaching the content they love rather than having to address the consistent cell phone issues.
Management, you know, management of people for sure. All right. Well, let's talk about just a couple things as far as advantages. You know, if schools can really like use this legislation to kind of like refocus and improve what they're already doing, you know, what are some advantages for limiting student use of phones during the school day? And obviously the distractions and more time on teaching and learning. We know that that's really the biggest goal. But I see a couple of other things that I think will really be a positive that the students don't necessarily realize that they're missing out on. And the first one I think would have to do with really more face-to-face socialization amongst their peers.
Oh, absolutely. You know, since 2020, we've really disconnected as a society in general, and let alone the kids now. You know, I look at our freshmen, they were in fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I look at our, seniors, they were just coming in as eighth, ninth graders, right? So it's, when we talk about our students, they were very young when they lost that socialization during the prime time in which they needed it.
Yep.
And so they learned and adapted through technology. So now we are punishing.
They still desire it, whether they realize it or not. They most of them have a desire for that connection.
Yes, they do. And the only time right now that they're getting a lot of that connection is negative. Mm-hmm. It's negative because of the conflict that's been created through social media or messaging. It's negative because a teacher or principal is addressing them with a consequence for being on the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
There's just the face-to-face social piece needs to be more positive and more authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's been very aggressive and conflict-based.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the other thing too that I think there's definitely a connection, you hear a lot about record numbers in terms of mental health and the things that students and even, you know, with parents, what they're going through. And I think there definitely would be a connection that if we could get more appropriate use, maybe a little bit more limited use of our electronic devices, I think we could see some improvement in those mental health outcomes. And, you know, you think about from a standpoint for a student who truly is addicted, they may or may not recognize the addiction and the problems that it's causing.
Yep.
But if you can get through that initial push, better stuff lies on the other side if you can get through that and break that addiction.
Absolutely. And showing them aspects of that as we work through will be essential.
You know, I've heard some, you know, that this is obviously something that around the country, there have been a lot of talk about this. I've heard of some schools where students actually report if they're in a building where it's been implemented well and it gets to the point where that addiction isn't really permitted during the school day, the students are actually reporting feeling less anxiety, feeling better being in school during the day, actually looking forward to that disconnection from the digital. And I think that's really interesting that when you get to that point where the students finally recognize it, it really means something when that's coming from the student that, hey, I didn't even realize what a hold this had on me and how much less anxiety I feel when I'm not constantly, looking to check, you know, whether it's social media or communication or looking for something new or just looking for that next, you know, next dopamine hit.
Oh, absolutely. You know, so that is a positive. That is a good thing knowing that there's more positivity on the other end of this, whatever parameters are implemented across the state.
Yeah, and hope that we can hopefully get to that point where we start to hear students sharing those same kind of things that I didn't realize what a problem this was causing, but I'm feeling a lot better about things now that I've got it under control.
And once it is under control and the access and use is limited, what they say, 21 days to create a habit. Right. So if you can take 5 days in the building to establish the habit, you're hoping that it continues to extend at home. And then it becomes just a natural way of their life rather than falling off during the weekends, then coming back to the restriction, or else you're constantly in that negative loop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the other side of it is, too, we're not trying to end the use of these devices altogether.
Not.
I mean, we all use them for daily tasks. And
it's the world we live in.
Well, there's an amazing number of things that they do to make life more efficient and more productive as well. So it's really just a matter of seeing those things and recognizing those things that are addictive and then being able to implement a plan and use these in a healthy way. Really so that you can get the maximum advantage out of it and then leave all the negatives, you know, to the side and not be as affected by all of those.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be interesting as we move forward with this July 1st deadline coming and as we get into August and the start of next school year, it's going to be interesting to see how different districts develop their individual policies, or in most cases, it's probably going to be revamp or revisit their policies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the limitation of devices is going to be a challenge. It's not something that developed overnight. This has been a good decade in the making.
Oh, right.
Leading up to this. So it's not going to be a simple and an easy fix to completely like overnight flip a switch. But, you know, as we've talked about in the long run, you know, having a really solid plan, if it's implemented consistently among a staff, you know, both administrative and teaching staff, I think we can get to a point where we have better socialization, better interactions among students. And, you know, think about if the stress and anxiety that come along with these addictions to the digital world, if we can kind of lower that and put that off to the side, how much more time and how much more energy there's going to be to spend on teaching and learning, which is really the goal.
Absolutely. And we just need to keep that in the forefront of why we're doing this.
So we hope that you've gained some insights and ideas while listening through season two. We're looking forward to coming back next fall for season three.
If you've enjoyed the podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and write us a review. You can find all episodes of Teaching in Tech with Alan and Chad on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.